Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie K. Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie K. and Misty Hall. 7 minutes late for our Straight Wives Talk radio show. How are you, Misty?
I'm wonderful. How are you tonight?
Well, obviously, I was tied up in a computer glitch, which was not an easy thing.
No, it's never easy to deal with. Our listeners
who must be sitting there worried about us, wondering why we're so late. So can we blame it on the daylight standard time?
I think we should. That sounds good to me.
It sounds like as good as an excuse to me as anything.
But it will work.
I couldn't believe my computer froze up, and I couldn't get on. So I do apologize to all of you who are sitting there patiently waiting to hear this broadcast. And each week, Misty Hall and I are here to talk to you about the issues, about straight gay marriages and all the pain and the suffering that goes along with them and all the complexities of these relationships. And we do our best to try to make people feel connected, either through our, you know, broadcasts, through our chat room, through our newsletter, through Misty's coaching. There's a whole variety of ways that women can, you know, get in touch with us and feel better about it. And certainly the complexities of the situation are many, and we just try to address them as they keep coming up. So, Misty, how was your week?
Well, my week was rather exhausting, but I made up for it today. I've sat in the sun, been to the sand, went to the beach, so it was good getting some sand between my toes and feeling the warm weather. However, in a couple of months, it'll probably be so hot I won't want to go to the beach. So, but today was a very refreshing day.
Oh, I'm glad you had a good day. And I hear around the country it's been really a beautiful weekend, and hopefully the beginning of spring. And if any of you have any questions or concerns that you would like to address with us, please call us at this phone number. It's our call-in number, 1-646-716-4893. I will repeat that, 1-646-716-4893. And, of course, when you call, you can be anonymous. You never have to give your name. But if there are any issues that you would like to address, we're more than happy to do that with you. So right now, tonight, Misty and I are talking about discussing an issue that I think that many of our women need to hear about. And it's about dysfunctional men, and not just our husbands, because there are so many different dysfunctional men that are out there. And I think that a lot of times that, you know, women just think, you know, having a gay husband, you know, is the worst that can happen, but that's not necessarily true. You know, there are all kinds of dysfunctional men out there. And if you don't understand this, then chances are that when you do get out of your relationship and you look for a new one, you're going to run into the same problem, maybe not a gay husband, but certainly not a husband that will make you satisfied or happy. So I think a lot of it has to deal with knowing who you are, excuse me, and being able to recognize what the problems are when you start a new relationship, or even understanding the problems that are in your current relationship when you aren't sure. So, Misty, do you think it's easy to make a wrong decision again?
Oh, wow. Yes, absolutely. I think that's why you have to educate yourself, take yourself a break from relationships, get to know yourself, and identify the patterns that you've repeated in past relationships, and once you identify those, you're able to find those early on in your next relationship. So, I mean, yeah, if you don't take time to work on yourself and figure out what your needs are, figure out what the patterns you've repeated in past relationships, you're very prone to set yourself up for failure. And it may not be a gay person, but it may be someone unable to give you the love that you need, maybe someone with some type of addiction. I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen, as you know, Bonnie.
Right. Well, that reminded me that I wanted to talk a little bit about a book that I'm redoing that I had out a few years ago. And I thought it was such a great concept when I came out with it. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to put it together in time the way I wanted to. But the book came out even though the idea didn't work out. But the book is called Man Readers, and it's called Man Readers, A Guide to Men, you know, A Woman's Guide to Dysfunctional Men. And the thing is that there are so many different kinds of dysfunctional men that are out there, as I mentioned, And unless you're made aware of it, you know, it's very easy to fall into the, you know, next wrong relationship. And, you know, what I really like about this book, you know, that I'm redoing, so don't feel compelled to buy it right now, because I'm adding a lot of new things to it, and it should be ready in the next couple of months, on how to do your own man reading, how to tell, you know, all the signs when something isn't right. But one of the things that I wanted to put in here, or to discuss with you, I have a chapter in here about can a man change or be trained, which I thought was really interesting. And it says, I'm just going to read a little bit of this from you, for you. It says, my grandmother and mother were great believers in the phrase, you have to know how to train a man. I heard it often but as I was growing up and as I entered into adulthood, making my own poor relationship choices. The irony of this was that neither my grandmother nor my mother had good marriages or relationships following their marriages. Like my youngest sister used to retort back when they would tell us that, they are not dogs that you can train. Well, who was right? People are basically who they are. For some reason, women have a very difficult time accepting that truth. They work so hard to change someone who just cannot be changed because he does not want to change. And the worst part about these women, is these women look at the failure as their personal failure when their man does not change. They play the if-only game. This is where you keep giving yourself internal messages of, if only I was more attractive, if only I was more supportive, if only I was thinner, if only I was smarter, if only I was more loving, if only, if only, if only, if only. I have seen women try every trick in the book to try to change their husbands, but nothing works. They marry men with a myriad of problems, expecting that enough love will resolve these problems. It's not true. My mother taught me a valuable lesson before my last marriage. When I introduced her to my handsome, charming, soon-to-be husband, I was really expecting her to be thrilled by my choice, but she was not. The next day, she said to me, he is a bad risk for marriage, and I was stunned. I couldn't understand where she was coming from. When I questioned her, she said, he comes from a bad background that will always stay with him. I was so hurt, I knew that my 2B was from a poor neighborhood. He had grown up in the city projects with family members that had adopted him as an infant, but so what? I misinterpreted what my mother was saying, because when you are in love, it is easy to protest anyone who saith too much and find fault with their arguments. That's because love is blind, and desperation is blinder. What my mother was saying, very simply, is that you are marrying someone's baggage. Whatever baggage they bring into the relationship becomes part of your relationship. If someone comes from an unstable family background, that will follow you for all the days of your life. That's the truth. People carry with them years of dysfunction they grew up with. In time, some things can change, but boy, it takes so much work. It is rare to find a man who is unscathed when he from a dysfunctional family background. Sometimes it can work to your advantage, depending on the dysfunction, but most of the time it will not. Over the years, many lessons I have learned that is that learned behaviors repeat themselves. When I studied child abuse in college, the statistics shocked me when I learned that 80% of people who perpetrate child abuse were abused themselves. I thought, how could this possibly be? If someone was beaten as a child, how could they do that to their children, knowing the pain firsthand? When I was told this was learned behavior, it did not make a lot of sense to me. Who would want to learn a behavior to hurt their children? What I came to understand once I became a parent was that learned behavior theory is totally true. Learned behavior is not cognitive or thinking behavior, it's an automatic response behavior. And here's my best example. When my children did something wrong, as all children do, the first thing I would be to yell at them. And when I raised my voice, the words that came out of my mouth were the same words that either my mother or father yelled at me when I was a child. Those were some of the same words that I swore I would never say to my children when I had children one day. They were hurtful words, and when I said them afterwards, I thought to myself, how could I ever say something so mean to my children? I love them. Ugh. Then I realized, learn behavior. When you don't have time to think, you just react. And how do you react? By repeating the first thing that comes to your memory, which is usually what your parents said to you. So for an example, if your child accidentally spills a cup on the floor splattering juice all over, your response said with anger is, how could you be so clumsy? Excuse me. Are you there, Missy?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
And what do you, and you know, I go on about other examples, but what do you think about learned behavior?
I think, excuse me, especially after working with children and working with adults,
mm-hmm.
it's almost like we focus on and we say to ourselves, we will never repeat. We will never repeat a pattern. We will never do this. We will never do that. And that's where most of the focus goes, because you see it happen time and time after again, where we do repeat patterns. We do learn about relationships from our parents. And if we see our parents beating each other, screaming at each other, whatever it is that we see our parents doing, that's what we think is normal for a relationship. And, for example, if a child grows up in a home where the mother and father fight all the time, they witness domestic violence and things of that nature, more than likely, if that child is a girl, grows up, more than likely she's going to marry someone that does the same thing to her or be in a relationship with someone that does the same thing to her. And you know what? The sad part is it's going to be normal for her. She's
mm-hmm.
not going to know that there's any better or know that it can be better until maybe she hits a breaking point, or maybe she confides in someone that, you know, touches her and says, listen, this is not what love is supposed to be. I think we have a very warped understanding sometimes of what love is supposed to be. Sometimes people think love includes pain, abuse, neglect, being screamed at. I mean, all these different various things. That's not love. Love is not chaotic. Love is kind. And unfortunately, we tend to repeat patterns that we're taught, and we tend to repeat patterns that we have been a part of. For example, if we've been in a bad marriage, we tend to repeat patterns again. It's just with a different person and maybe in a different form. But the same issues a lot of times pop up again. That's why it's so important to recognize what some of those issues are. Ask yourself how you identify and how you define love. What is that to you? And then ask yourself again, how I define love, is it healthy? And what does
mm-hmm.
health mean to you? I mean, you've got to go through all those steps. And it can get rather complicated. But the good thing is, love should not be so complicated. If you work on yourself and help yourself, heal yourself, and learn to see what patterns you've created for yourself and that you find acceptable, that's where you got to be careful. You should never be acceptable of something that doesn't feel right, feel good, or something that you know that's put you in danger. That's just not acceptable. So you have to be the one.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
One of the things I continued on with this is that, you know, one way you can tell the difference between people who come from nurturing, loving, supportive families from people who come from dysfunction, you know, is the way they respond in a situation either to their wives or to their children. And I said, guess what? Dysfunction may seem like a modern-day terminology, but it is no more prevalent today than it ever was. There's just not a fancy term for it when I was growing up.
Exactly.
And people are under the misimpression that life was in the old days was better. You know, because you always hear people saying that, you know, well, things are so much better back then. But I said, I think it would have appeared better, but it wasn't. Expectations were different. Couples were expected to stay together forever, for better or worse, until death did they part. But that did not mean that they were happy or that there was a good quality of life. Plenty of women suffered under the oppression of their husbands, and plenty of children suffered because parents stayed together and led unhappy lives. And even worse, these families were the role models for their children. If a father demeaned the mother, the female children in the family learned that this is to be expected in a marriage. The male children observed, this is how you treat a woman, once again learned behavior. Statistics are overwhelming that show that women who come from families where there was abuse are likely to repeat the same pattern in their own lives with their future mates. Do you think that's true?
Yeah. I think, wow, I agree with so much you said in just that statement. I mean, not statement, but statements. Let me make that plural, especially when, you know, I mean, it's just being a marriage and family therapist. You know, all in my graduate program, we study relationships. That's pretty much what
mm-hmm.
the whole thing is about, relationships, identifying patterns, and finding ways to intervene in those patterns and bring them out, heal them, and go forward, move forward. It's all about growth. And I have to completely agree with what you said. You know, sometimes people say, oh, you know, it's dysfunctional, it's so much worse, it's so much this, it's so much that today. No, it's not. It was hit better. It was more indirect.
I think so, too. And I think that's
and
how we
also,
got to the point where we are today, because we've all come through that.
Absolutely. And know today you have rights as a woman. You can speak up. You can file for a divorce and not look down upon or freak out because your children may be, you know, ostracized or not played with by other kids, because there's so many single parents out there, men and women being single parents. So I think it's easier in some respects to go forward and move on with, in a divorce, if you're experiencing such difficulties in a broken marriage. But before, it existed. It truly existed. It's just harder to get out of, for the social norms and to fit into society. And, you know, people were just ashamed of that type of thing. But I think they kept it behind more closed doors than they do today, which a lot of stuff is still behind closed doors today. But I do think
right.
with the different outlets today, people do come and get therapy quicker, or speak to social workers quicker, or speak to, you know, call an abuse line quicker, because information's out there of things that you can contact. There is help out there.
Sometimes. So
yeah.
I went on and continued. Whenever I counsel women who are in destructive relationships, one of the main factors I bring up to them is they are setting a bad example for their children. They are taken aback when I say that until I explain the learned behavior aspect of it. If the woman won't stand up for herself in the marriage, it is likely the daughter will not stand up for herself when she gets married. And that's how the cycle repeats from generation to generation. And then I wrote in here that I recently received a letter from one of my online support group members, which epitomizes this thinking, which said, "Dear Bonnie, I used to keep track of how many minutes a day I spent in tears, and now I can't remember the last time I cried over something other than a tear-jerking movie. I had been married for 5 or 6 years when I began to think that the life I was living actually fit the description of abuse. I wasn't any different from any other abuse victim, though. There were so many excuses, so many I'm sorry, so many promises, and I believed it would get better someday. Of course, that someday never came, not in that life, with that husband anyway. The biggest regret of my life was that I allowed my two beautiful daughters to grow up believing that their father's abusive behavior was acceptable. After 25 years of enduring abuse, a visit to my oldest daughter's home made me realize that the change was up to me. I was the one that had to change. I was never going to change him. I couldn't do that. I also knew that as I stood there looking at the bruises on my gorgeous daughter's face, if I didn't make the change now, her abuser would end up killing her. If I continued to let her believe the abuse was acceptable, she would also continue to live it. The legacy had to stop, and if it didn't, my precious grandson would also grow up with the same skewed belief of normalcy that would either turn him into an abuser or a life as a victim of abuse. I left my abuser. It was probably the hardest decision of my life. I knew I would be giving up a life of beautiful material goods while also giving up a life of painful emotional and physical abuse. It was difficult to see that payoff would be worth it, but it didn't take long. I knew I made the right decision to divorce when I didn't even think about keeping track of tears and conflict. I was able to sleep at night. I was able to work all day without abusive interruptions. I was able to call my mother and my friends and families whenever I wanted. I was free. There aren't enough material goods in this world to be worth my life of freedom and happiness and the freedom and happiness of my children and my grandchildren. I am now happily married to a wonderful, peaceful man. My daughter has also divorced her abuser, and she is also now in a healthy, loving marriage. Life is good, and I tell my new husband every day that I don't take a minute of this peaceful life for granted. I never will. Bonnie, I pray that all women in abusive relationships can gain the self-confidence and esteem to find the peace that I have found. Thank you so much for your hard work toward this effort. The legacy must be stopped." So isn't that interesting?
Wow, what a story. What a story. You know, those stories break my heart, but at least it has a happy ending. You know, some stories don't have a happy ending, where women have the courage to go through with the divorce and show even their adult children, you know, it's never too late
mm-hmm.
to get out of it. It's unhealthy. And it's not. I think that's the message. That's the big message for people to hear. It's never too late to walk away, to get out of abuse. There's no amount of money, no home that's going to keep you safe from that type of relationship if you're abused. It's just not worth it.
Well, what I went on to write after that, I said, what I find so interesting is asking women who have daughters or sisters if they would want them to marry a man who was like their husbands. They always have a resounding no and bemoan how horrible it would be to see their daughters end up like they are. And yet they are willing to settle for this life themselves. They are willing to compromise happiness for existence and stay locked beneath the gray cloud year in and year out. Why? The reality is that before almost any of the men will change, women will change, and not for the better. This is so ironic because these are the women who went into the marriage feeling so sure that the man would change given enough tender, loving care. Instead, it's the woman who ends up being the one who changes. She loses her sense of self-esteem, sexual esteem, and self-worth. And the man, he remains the same. No change noted. How does this happen? Easily. Our self-esteem grows with positive reinforcement. Each accomplishment we have adds to our feeling of self-worth. When you are living with a man who needs to change but does not want to, there is very little in terms of accomplishing this. It is not long before he resents what you are trying to do, no matter how nicely you say it to him. Then the resentment turns to anger. The anger doesn't have to be volatile, although it certainly can be. It can manifest as emotional abuse, which is sometimes worse than physical abuse. You see, physical abuse can be proven because there are telltale signs. But emotional abuse leaves no outward scars, just inside battering. It is not unusual to find that men who treat women abusively are well-liked or loved by the outside world. They are charming, likable, and excellent at hiding their real nature. Isn't that why you fall in love with them? Of course. They reassure you that you are the only one who has a problem with their behavior. Everyone else thinks they are great guys, so therefore, you are the problem. Get it? One more layer of self-esteem peeled away. After all, why are you the only one who can't seem to make him happy? He sure seems happy when he's with other people. At this point, the feeling of sinking starts setting in. You are very unsure of yourself. Maybe he is right. And of course, these guys know how to push your buttons to make you feel worse about life than you already feel. They start to criticize you not only as a wife, but also as a mother. This makes you question your sense of judgment. Emotional abuse is constant. Usually physical abuse goes in cycles, but emotional abuse is practiced every day. And yet, we still love these men. We are still convinced that if we love them enough, they will love us the way we want them to love us. And guess what? It's not happening. They are not capable of treating you the way you deserve to be treated. I tell women, cut your losses. It makes no sense to stay in a relationship where your needs are not the most important consideration to a man. So what do you think?
I have to agree with everything you just said. And, you know, it's so true. I think women in our culture are so tuned into and taught, you know, you're going to grow up and have the fairy tale wedding, the fairy tale life, blah, 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 blah. But they forget to tell you that sometimes when you marry Prince Charming, he can be an abuser. We forget about that part.
Mm-hmm.
And not only do we forget about that part, eventually we find it acceptable because then we think, okay, well, we can. Also, our society and culture teaches us we women can do anything. We can have a full-time job. We can be a professional. We can be a mother and a wife, everything, sister, daughter, all things wrapped into one. So also on that list, we're taught we can fix things and change people. And that's mistake number one. You know, when you get into a relationship, realize you have to be accepting of that person as they are in that moment. Don't expect them to change. You have to be okay with that because never get into a relationship saying you want to change someone. It doesn't happen. The only person you have capable of change over is yourself. So you have to realize that. And I don't think many people realize that. I hear so many young women, middle-aged women, you know, they're going to marry someone or be with someone in a relationship. Well, they say they'll change when we're together because I'm a good influence on them. It doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't happen. I mean, sometimes it gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
I've rarely seen the instance when someone came together and they said they would change when they come together and that change took place. I don't know if I've ever seen that before happen. I'm not saying it's impossible, but don't expect it. You have to be acceptable of the person as they are in that moment. Because the only person you can change is yourself.
In this particular book, Man Readers, I talk a lot about sex. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think you and I both agree that sex is so important to women.
Mm-hmm.
And any woman who thinks it's not important, it's because she's never had, you know, sex in the correct way. Or maybe she's had sex, but she hasn't made love with a man who truly knows how to make
mm-hmm.
love to her. And, you know, here's where I discuss, like, so many different problems that can come up. And I know that we specialize in, you know, straight gay marriages, but there's so many other variables also, so I just wanted to read a little bit about that so you should really know what's out there. And it was really scary when I was doing all this research. But, you know, like I say, it's always better to know ahead of time, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So let me just go through the list of oddities. And, you know, like I say, it's a long list. And sorry for taking that delay in the list, but I thought it was someplace where it wasn't. Okay.
That's okay.
So the first thing on the list, of course, is sexual orientation. I write about gay and bisexual. And I say this may seem inconceivable, but there's an estimated 4 million gay men who are or have been married to straight women in this country. And you ask, why would a gay man want to marry a woman? Simple. He's hoping that if he loves his straight wife enough, he won't be gay anymore. At least one-third of gay men are able to perform heterosexual sex when they're in their teens and 20s. That's because their testosterone is very high level, and any kind of sex momentarily feels good. But as they get older, that changes. Their true sexual preferences eventually surface, and no matter how much they love their wives, they feel unfulfilled. Their need to have male encounters and physical bonding takes over, and they often leave their wives and families to find that fulfillment. Unfortunately, that's not the case all the time. Some men will continue living in a straight marriage no matter how miserable they are because they can't deal with the fact that they are gay. They still fulfill their gay sexual needs, but they don't develop any kind of emotional attachment to men because they're in their own minds that would make them gay. They justify their indiscretions this way. These men are never going to admit that they are gay, no matter how much proof you have. They will turn the tables on you and make you feel that you are the inadequate one in the marriage. Chances are your sex life is non-existent, but your husband will make sure that you feel like you're the one responsible for that. If only you weren't so pushy, so demanding, so uncaring, so sloppy, so fat, etc., etc. There is plenty of blame coming out of his mouth, all aimed at you. The truth is, you just have the wrong plumbing. There's nothing wrong with you. It's him. And then there are men who call themselves bisexual. In almost all cases, bisexual is just nothing more than a chic way of saying gay. It's a lot easier to say bisexual than gay, which is why so many gay married men use that expression. If someone is truly bisexual, then he should be satisfied having sex with either a man or a woman. If he is married, his wife should satisfy his sexual needs. But she doesn't. He wants a man. That means he is gay. The gay men who use that word think that a trendy word like bisexual would be more acceptable to their wives, families, friends, and employers. It's not. A better word for this is limbo man. These are men who are emotionally straight but sexually gay and caught in between both worlds, never finding real happiness in either one. The bottom line, call it whatever you want, but do you want to live with a man who wants to have sex with men? Do you feel like living with a man who can never make you feel like you're truly or his first choice? Nothing is more debilitating to a woman than feeling that she is not worthy of a sexual partner. It not only robs you of your self-esteem, but also your sexual esteem. So next on my list was sexual orientation, transsexual. Under sexual orientation was transsexual and transgendered. And this is a situation that is far less common than gay men getting married. However, it's estimated that there are over 20,000 transgendered men living in marriages with women. A transgendered man is one who believes he is a woman living in a man's body. transgendered men come to terms with themselves in their late 20s or 30s, they know that from the time they are children that they feel different, even if they can't define what it is. Some of them make life-changing decisions to transform into a woman, which means they are now transsexuals. This happens over a period of time and starts with intensive counseling, then hormonal treatments, and ultimately ends with reconstructive surgery, removing the penis and having it restructured into a vagina. Of course, we see that happening now with women too, right, Misty?
Mm-hmm. Happens
on both
sides.
Sarah's daughter, Chastity, who's now Chad. The marriage is also often over from the early stages of the hormonal changes. Some transgendered men continue living in their marriages and live out their fantasies without their wives finding out. They do other things to satisfy their needs and fantasies, such as hair removal and cross-dressing. They usually have poor sexual relationships with their wives. Have you ever worked with any transgendered people yet?
No, I'm very limited in working with that, no.
Okay. I've worked with a few, and it's certainly not easy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sexual fetishes. Sexual fetishes refers to being sexually aroused by an object instead of a living thing. When man has a fetish, it's in a form of mental disorder because he cannot experience true sexual fulfillment or arousal unless he has these specific objects that sexually stimulate him. Fetishes range from the mild to the extreme. Some men are happy just to wear a feminine object like woman's underwear or pantyhose. Others go far beyond. In my research, men with fetishes who marry seldom have satisfying sexual relationships with their wives. It is not uncommon for the sex to be very infrequent and unfulfilling to both partners. Men who have fetishes have a difficult time keeping an erection. They also have a difficult time developing a sense of intimacy in the relationship. It's estimated that 1 out of 30 men has some kind of fetish. Chances are if you meet enough men, you'll run into one of them. And be assured that these men do not sit and give away their secrets in the beginning. They are not going to hide their obsessions until they feel you are in love with them. They're going to hide their obsessions until they feel you're in love with them enough to overlook or accept them. They work very hard to keep their secret, a secret from you, feeling you will run the other way once you learn about it. Women often say to me, I'm not comfortable living this way. I can understand that. Not many women would be uncomfortable with their soulmate wearing ruffles, heels, or costumes, or diapers, even in the privacy of their home. Most of these men need these props to become sexually aroused or turned on. Turn off. For many women it is. But some women could not care less and in fact embrace their husband's whims. It's all what you're willing to live with and accept, but if you can't accept it, then leave. Fetishes are deeply rooted with little chance for change, so if you think your husband can change, you're wrong. And then I say to give you a better understanding, here are some examples of common fetishes. Misty, let me ask you a question. If you really loved a man and he was a cross-dresser, do you think you could live with it?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I have to say, And this is my personal opinion. I'm not going to give my professional opinion here because I could, you know, certainly work with a couple that they experience. But for my personal self, no, to me that would not be something that I think I could be acceptable as a husband or a life partner.
Excuse me, we have somebody, I think, calling in. Hold on one moment. Hello, this is Bonnie and Misty.
Hi, Bonnie. It's Victoria. Hello. I just joined your chat group earlier today.
Hi, Victoria. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So I have a question. It's kind of regarding something that was mentioned earlier in your radio show.
Sure.
So I've ordered a few of your books, and they're all in the mail. And I just had a question. I know you have the checklist for gay men, and
right.
I was just curious whether you've sort of developed an understanding of, like, a checklist for women who marry gay men, if there are certain personality characteristics, or are there some sort of patterns that you're seeing in the women who fall victim to this circumstance?
Yes, and you're probably one of them.
Yes.
I have to say, but I definitely, and you know, in the book, Gay Husband Checklist for Women Who Wonder, there is a list in there of the prototype of woman that a gay man looks for. And I know that may sound, you know, kind of strange, but why are they looking for a certain kind of woman? And I'm not saying it's a conscious way of looking for women all the time, you know, that's just sometimes subconsciously they're doing it. But there's definitely a prototype of those women. And, you know, some of them include women who are, well, look, self-esteem is a really big issue. That if men seek women, you know, who don't really have high senses of self-esteem. I mean, that's just the reality of it. And one of the things you learn about me is I've suffered with that my whole life. And many of our women have, you know, due to different circumstances. And low self-esteem, as we talk about it a lot, doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what you look like, where you come from, how much money you have. It's all an internal message that women grow up with. So low self-esteem is one you know, kind of woman they look for. They look for women a lot of time who are in human services, the helping profession, and I think that's really a very common bond with many of us because, you know, they're always hoping that if anything happens and we find out because of our understanding natures that we'll be able to deal with it better or accept it because there's too high a number of women who are part of, you know, this network who are in the helping profession in one way or another, teachers, nurses, social workers, counselors, therapists, you know, a lot of...
And that includes me. So
I told you you'll be part of this list. Also, another big characteristic they look for are women who have limited sexual experience. Does that include you too?
Yeah, probably.
Well, it didn't include me, but, you know, the bottom line is that even with, you know, a lot of sexual experience, a lot of times you don't understand what it is. But men feel safer with women who don't have much sexual experience to compare it to. Also, if you, a lot of times they mix this in with religion. I don't know if you come from a religious background.
Yes, I do.
But a lot of times if women haven't had a lot of sexual experience because of the church, because of their religious, you know, Christian upbringings or religious upbringings of what, you know, whatever their religion is, you know, they you know, many times have limited sexual experience, and so they wouldn't even know what a sexual norm is. You know, it's easy for men to convince you, well, the purpose of having sex is for procreating, you know, it's not supposed to be there to be pleasurable. And then they make you feel degraded or belittled if that's why you want it. So, yeah, there are a bunch of reasons, you know, of the kind of women that are not reasons, prototype of kind of woman that men would pick out. Do you agree with that, Misty?
Absolutely. It's so true. It's, you know, I think that goes with anything. When someone has something going on, and I'll speak directly to, like, you know, a man that's fighting his homosexuality, he wants to be straight, and he's going to go towards a certain type of woman. He's going to go towards a woman just like you just explained, someone that he thinks may be accepting, someone that may be gentle with them because, you know, they're going through that. They know the issues, and they're fighting it. So they're trying to pick out someone that they think that may be more accepting, understanding, and truth be known, a lot of times when they marry, they don't understand it themselves. So I think they do go for a certain type of women, especially, and you can especially see that if you ever attend a retreat that we have with straight wives. You can look around, you'll find so many connections, it seems weird. So many connections in terms of, you know, the types of jobs you have, you know, even to like how long you dated, how, you know, where you're from, your religious background, just so many different things that are in common. It's just,
you know, I think
it's
another,
hard to describe.
Another factor that, Misty, I think we found a lot of, I don't know, this, we're not asking you to put you on the spot, Victoria, but another common factor is that a lot of times women who came from abusive homes, if they grew up with abusive parents, you know, a mother or father, then they're likely to move into more of a relationship with someone just to jump out of where they were. You know, even if they think there's something wrong, even if they have some inkling, they still feel that, they, you know, they're more comfortable in that kind of environment than living in their abusive childhood environment.
Right.
So
that
some of the women that we've worked
with
have that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The thing is, though, the interesting thing about my background, there was no abuse in my home. My parents divorced when I was in grade school, but my dad is gay. So You know, that old adage, you know, we look for someone just like our father, so...
Exactly, and that's another thing. We do have women who have husbands, gay husbands, who also have gay fathers.
Yes, I've worked with many women. I mean, you're not the only one, Victoria. I've worked with many, many women that also have gay fathers. And sometimes they don't find out until after their father has passed away, or, you know, like, their father's much older, and then they find out, you know, they sort of make the connections. Yes, you're not the only one in respect to that. I find that to be very common, don't you, Bonnie?
I wouldn't say very common, but it's common enough. And some women do know that their fathers are gay growing up. When did you find out?
Probably, my mom hinted around to the fact when I was a teenager, but when I found out what was going on with my husband, she said it again, and it stuck this time. I guess I was kind of in denial, because it's my dad. I mean, he's remarried. To a woman.
Hmm.
And so when she said it again, when all this was going on, I'm like, okay, I'll listen, and I'll accept it now. So, yeah, that's kind of how... So I've only really... accepted that for probably a year and a half or so since all of this came out with my husband.
Now, did your dad ever have a discussion with you about it?
Oh, no. It's a huge family secret.
Mm-hmm.
So, he he's not out or anything like that, but he cheated on my mom with men just like my husband does with me, and I would imagine that's still going on, because we know that, you know, I mean, my stepmom doesn't have all the parts to satisfy, so I wouldn't imagine that it stopped.
You can be sure that it hasn't. Now, mm-hmm. Did your husband know this about you when you were going with him?
About my dad?
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned it to him just a couple years after we were married, so I don't think I said anything before we actually got married.
Yeah, but you sound like a very lovely, kind person, and you said you're in social
you.
Work, right? And you're in
yes,
social work?
Yes, I'm a social worker. I graduated in May with my MSW.
Isn't that wonderful? And did you have any hints at all before you got married?
Before, no, not at all. Until the big, shocking revelation, about a year and a half ago, there were some things that, he told me he had experimented, and I didn't think much of it because, I mean, it's not uncommon. And then on our first wedding anniversary, he took me to an upscale restaurant in the area where he was once a bartender when he was younger, and the manager there, who's a friend of his, who's gay, brought us a bottle of champagne, and then for several days after that, this gay manager of the restaurant, who was a friend of his, was calling him late at night, like after midnight, and I finally said, you know, here's a gay man calling you at, like, you know, quote, booty call hours, and it's kind of a consistent thing. Did you ever experiment with him? And, initially, he denied it, but after asking a few more times, he said, well, actually, yeah, here's what happened. So I kind of thought it was an isolated incident.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple other little things came up over the years. And then finally, I just kind of, everything snowballed, and I had these phone records and pictures, and there was just so, my pizza's here. There was so much evidence that I couldn't be in denial anymore about it.
Well, you want to get your pizza?
Yeah. Should I hang up the phone now?
You don't have to. You can go get your pizza. We'll keep talking, and then you can come back.
Okay. Should I just let you know when I'm back?
Absolutely. Just chime
okay.
in.
Okay. I'll see you in a couple minutes.
Back.
Thank you.
Okay. Not a problem. So, Misty, I'll go on to some of these other fetishes that we're talking about.
Okay,
we were talking about cross-dressers. Now, amazingly, 90% of men who cross-dress are not gay. Are you surprised mm-hmm. to hear that?
No,
you are?
I've read the research on that. I've read the research on that. But, you know, that's just something, I mean, some people can handle that. Personally, myself, that's not something I would want to have in a partner. I'm not trying to place judgment there. If a couple can handle it, it's them, you know.
Well, I said I was shocked when I first learned about it many years ago. I was always under the impression that men who wore women's clothes were gay. That is the stereotype that we were used to seeing in the media. I later learned mm-hmm. that most men who wear women's garments do not do it because of their sexuality. They are sexually aroused by wearing women's clothing. You see, unlike transgendered men who want to be women, cross-dressers are happy being men and do not want to change that. But if you're their size, expect them to be borrowing your clothes and or your shoes. If they are not your size, they'll be happy to go clothes shopping with you so you can be their cover. And, you know, I remember reading, you know, several different times or hearing from people who were married to cross-dressers. And I know that there was a cruise of the cross-dressers, you know, a few years ago that one woman told me that she went on with her husband, and there were several hundred of them that were, you know, on this cross-dressing cruise. I don't know if the cruise was just for cross-dressers, but, you know, like they all decided to go together, this whole big club of cross-dressers. And their wives didn't really seem to think anything about it. You know, they were just had good marriages, they felt, and their husbands were into doing this, and they didn't mind that they did it together because it wasn't a gay thing. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. like they were trying to pick up each other. Mm-hmm. And I'm like you. I say, whatever you can live with, as long as it's not hurtful,
mm-hmm.
you know, I guess, you know, different strokes for different folks. Then there's the one with the foot fetish and shoe fetish and boot fetish. And it may seem odd to categorize feet in the fetish arena, since I just stated that fetishes revolve around inanimate objects. But since many people who have a foot fetish also have a shoe fetish, I'm leaving it in this category. I've worked with some men who have this particular fetish. They are obsessed with looking at women's feet. This is their sexual turn-on. They are unable to get sexually aroused unless it's by a pair of shoes or feet. They can also get sexually aroused by sucking on your toes, which may or may not turn you on. But without this form of arousal, the foot fetish man will not be able to have successful sex with you. A boot fetish is closely related to the shoe fetish. Men who are sexually aroused by high-heeled shoes often feel the same about high-heeled boots. Some men also have a fetish from the materials that boots are made out of, such as leather or latex. And it's not quite as simple as you may think. There's various lengths of boots, from ankle to mid-calf to high boots, that men get fixated on. Were you aware of that?
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of things, yeah.
Yeah, some of the stuff is more than we need to know, but I think women should know
yeah.
it. Then
absolutely.
There's stockings and pantyhose fetish. A stocking fetish is a sexual fetish relating to women's stockings. Stocking fetishists usually find sexual partners clothed in sheer nylon or silk stockings to be sexually stimulating, or find the act of a person donning or removing a pair of stockings arousing. Some men find it arousing to collect and wear stockings, sometimes hidden under a pair of trousers. Of course, in the modern era we are living with, pantyhose fetishes have greatly replaced the stocking fetish. As many other common fetishes, as far as women's pantyhose, as many other common fetishes that can first surface in childhood or during adolescence. Often a pantyhose fetish may also engage in stocking fetishism, the unique silky sheer aspect, feminine's association, and the lure of both being the link. Many current-day males' fetishistic preference for pantyhose over stockings may be related to the fact that pantyhose are in almost all direct contact with female genitalia, or perhaps more importantly, preferred hosiery for most females when skirts and dresses are worn. When I studied more about the, you know, the pantyhose fetishes, I learned also that a lot of times when boys are young, and let's say they have a housekeeper, or an older, or an aunt, or someone who's really attractive, and, you know, that person's wearing, you know, pantyhose for some reason, like any kind of physical contact for a young boy gets them excited, and that's how they kind of become fixated on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you ever met any men into pantyhose?
I, through professionally, yes. I have,
mm-hmm.
I have met a lot of men that in couples that have had different types of fetishes and worked with couples on that. Mostly some of the men and women I've worked with have dealt with men wearing, you know, women underwear.
Yeah.
And
You
know, there's lots of different
like
things. But,
I've dealt with a lot, I guess probably several dozen men who are into women's underwear. But they're not gay. I mean, you know, they're just
straight
men into that.
And oftentimes they will go into, some of the men I've worked with will go into women's department stores and actually try on the women's underwear.
Right. In fact, I happen to hear about panties fetish. Panty fetishism is a sexual fetish relating to women's panties. It usually starts with the person looking or touching women's underwear and fantasizing about women wearing the garment. After imagining, they move on to the second stage, which usually means masturbation into a pair of panties. There are also men who enjoy women's underwear. Let me just go back to that one. You know, I think that there's just so many of these fetishes here that I'm going through. Women enjoy wearing women's underwear. They feel it brings out their feminine side. It's not necessarily a sex thing, but sometimes an emotional need. Then I talk about leather fetishes. I mean, there are some men who are really into leather fetishes, and when they are, they're usually into some kind of sexual bondage, and a lot of bondage equipment is made out of leather.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is something that I mentioned later on about, you know, I'll get into that in a moment, but also going through more fetishes. There's latex fetishes. How about fur fetishes? You know, we
mm-hmm.
had somebody in our chat room, remember that, whose husband was into the fur fetishes?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when men are attracted to fur, skin, or leather. And then the diapers fetish. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that one.
That was really bizarre.
Those are hard things. Yeah, those are hard things to deal with. I mean, you know, it's really hard to deal with those things. Many of those types of fetishes can cause a horrible strain on relationships. Not all. I'm not saying all couples. But it really can be a hard thing to deal with sometimes.
Well, it's funny. I talk about the diaper fetish, which I was not that familiar with until we had a woman come into our, you know, support group one point a few years ago. And, you know, this was part of something called infantilism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it says that infantilism is a way of returning to babyhood in other ways, ways other than wearing diapers. But infantilism has nothing to do with infants. This is where a man has a fantasy of being an infant or small child, giving him a feeling of sexual innocence and lack of power. This is more of a psychological fetish. These men's fantasies revolve around diapers, baby clothes, and toys. And it says a diaper lover, on the other hand, is a sexual fetish. Men who are into this fetish are looking for a sexual conclusion to being in a diaper, namely orgasm and ejaculation. So, you know, I distinguish between the two. And one time we had a woman who was in the support session, and it said she was very distraught because her husband was claiming to be bisexual. She explained that he was also into infantilism, and I asked her what he was involved with this, and she explained that he became sexually stimulated by wearing diapers and having baby powder put all over his front and back private parts. I told her how horrible that must be, but she wasn't upset about that. She was upset that he was bisexual. She claimed the fetish didn't bother her at all. You know, she was willing to participate with him in that. And that's why I say, I guess it depends on what you can live with.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. Because sometimes, you know, I mean, and men are not alone. Sometimes women have fetishes. So sometimes, you know, ideally they would get together with someone who would have the same fetish. You know, I'm not saying that couple did. But, you know, it all depends on every situation is unique to each couple. Is it something that the couple can live with? Is it something the couple can feel like both of them are being treated as equal? So, you know, it depends on a lot of things. Whether or not that relationship can be successful.
Well, one of the things I talk about also is sexual deviance for domination and submission. And I said that this is a scary category that is the world unto itself. And I'm the first to admit I never really understood the concept that pain is a sexual turn-on. There are so many different forms of this fetish, from mild to extreme. This ranges from females verbally humiliating males to making men into slaves with whips in hand to men tying up women with leather restraints and hitting them. There's lots of psychological mumbo-jumbo of why these people are turned on by these roles, but the main point is don't feel compelled to have to participate in this lifestyle. And it is a lifestyle. People with common bond know that where to find each other. They travel in packs and they have their own clubs. And I'm not trying to be judgmental. I just don't understand. I never have and I never will. I consider myself to be an open liberal person. But when it comes to pain and deviant humiliation, I really am stumped. And I said, while we're on the subject of pain, there's other forms of humiliation when it comes to domination and submission. And I go into some of those that I won't get into on the radio. But the thing is that if you ever understand that bondage and discipline, maybe you understand it better than I do.
You asking me?
Yeah, you.
I don't want to sound judgmental, but, you know, if that's something that someone enjoys and it's mutual, I think it's okay.
Yeah, but
for
you
them.
Understand why it is? I mean, you know, I know that it is. I'm just, I don't understand.
No, I'm with you. I don't understand pain associated with love or sex. I don't understand that. Personally,
either.
It's not for me, but there's couples that thoroughly enjoy it. So I don't understand associating pain with love or sex. That's just my opinion.
I know. I don't get it. I don't understand how women can get sexually aroused by being beaten. I just don't
But a
understand.
Lot do. A lot of men and women do that, and it's mutual. You know, it's consenting.
Yeah.
I guess I should say consenting, mutual and consenting.
Well, anyway, rather than go on and on, I just wanted to bring up a few fetishes. That's not even going into lifestyles and all the mental health issues, but there's, you know, so many things I mentioned in Man Readers. And like I say, I'm revising it to include a lot more things on how to know when you're meeting a man, you know, what things to look for so that you don't walk back into another dysfunctional type of relationship. I mean, look at all the men who are pedophiles who get married, you know, to women who have children.
I know.
You know, and that women have to be so careful of that.
It's scary. And even, not pedophiles, but husbands and wives and or wives that even molest their children or family members. I mean, it's common. It's out there.
I know. It's a very scary world out there, Missy. Well, I don't know if Victoria came back to join us, but she may be tied up right now, not with bondage or anything. I meant eating the pizza. And we've come to the point where we're ready to close our show. So, Victoria, I'm sorry we didn't get back to you in time, but feel free to call in anytime you like to discuss these issues. And hopefully with the information you're receiving, you'll learn a lot more about it. So, Missy, do you have any final words you'd like to say on finding a new man in your life?
Wow. Be careful. There is love. Don't ever quit believing in love. Love is out there. Believe in love. Just be careful when you choose. Make sure it is love. And there's always, I think, a certain red flag that can pop up. If your partner or your new love relationship, if they do something that you sort of keep under wraps, and it's something that you won't tell a best friend or a best confidant that you know that you can trust, if it's something you hide from them, let that be a red flag.
Well, I think the most important thing is to learn from the mistakes that you've already made, right? And to try to change
Absolutely.
Who you are before you look to meet someone.
Absolutely. So, but I'm assuming the person's already changed by the time they're in a relationship, so I shouldn't make that assumption. You're right. Number one is make sure that you've healed yourself. Make sure you have. Because only you can heal yourself. You're not going to meet someone and they're going to heal you. Don't expect that from a partner. Go into a relationship being whole and complete and expect that from someone else. And when you do get in that relationship, notice any red flags that come up. And like I said, if it's something that you feel compelled to not tell a best friend, you know, let that be a red flag. Discuss it with the best friend. And don't be afraid to hear their advice. Don't be afraid.
Right, and stop making excuses. I mean, I think that's the whole thing. You know, stop making excuses for these men that are not functional. You
Absolutely.
Know, they're not functional. Learn to cut your losses. You know, that's just not going to... I mean, I don't ever see these relationships having happy endings. When you go into something where there's so many problems, or
Absolutely.
When you're taking on somebody's past dysfunctional history and their baggage that you know is, you know, really out there, and you know that they have problems. You know, we cannot cure their problems. I think that's really an important thing to just you know, end with that message, Misty. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Don't remember, you have to accept them for how they are. Don't expect them to change. And remember, you don't have to settle for that. If it's less than who you are and less than what you wish for, don't settle for something that is not whole and complete.
Mm-hmm.
There are people, there are wonderful men out there, there's wonderful women out there, and you can come together, but you cannot find that person if you're stuck trying to fix someone else. You're going to overlook the person that you truly should be with.
Mm-hmm.
So
well,
love yourself.
I think those are great words of wisdom to leave our listeners with, that, you know, work on changing you, because you're certainly never going to change any man. And, you know, on future shows, we'll talk about different signs and different things you can do to become your own man reader before you get into, you know, a situation that's just as bad or not worse than one you're leaving. So with those words, Misty, I think we'll say goodnight to our listeners.
Good night and love to all.
All right, and we'll be back here next week. Have a great week.
Bye-bye. You too.